Beloved children of God, if you find this text confusing, don't worry, because everybody who was listening to what Jesus said found it confusing as well. John 10, of course, as Jane mentioned, is known for that rich and comforting image of Jesus as the Good Shepherd. And we'll get into that part of the text next week. But it begins with this solemn warning against the, what he calls the thieves and the bandits. And then there's this odd mixture of metaphors that comes through. There's the gate and the shepherd and the thieves and the robbers. And with all that, we tend to get a little mixed up. Very truly, I tell you, anyone who does not enter the sheepfold by the gate, but climbs in by another way, is a thief and a bandit. And the one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The way that you can tell a thief and a bandit from the shepherd, Jesus says, is that they don't come in by the gate, which is him, of course. They climb in over a wall, or they get in by some other way. Only the shepherd goes in by the gate. And then a few verses later, Jesus not only identifies himself as the shepherd, but then also identifies himself as the gate. So, what is this all about? Well, first, it seems that this is a confusing mixture of metaphors. How can Jesus be both the shepherd and the gate to the sheep? But actually, it's not so strange. Even today, some Middle Eastern shepherds have been known to lie across the entrance to a makeshift fold out in the fields so that they could tell if any of the sheep were getting out or if any of the predators were getting in. So Jesus could be the good shepherd and the gate at the same time. But then Jesus says that anyone who messes with the flock without echoing the shepherd's voice, without the shepherd's authorization, is a thief and a bandit. So who are the thieves and the bandits? Well, it's always good to remember that the Bible is not really divided up into chapters and verses. It's something that we've added helpfully to find our way around. The fact is that sometimes those chapters and verses can mess up our understanding of a text. And this is one of those places. When you come to the beginning of chapter 10, it sounds like a new beginning, a new topic. But there's no hint, in fact, that the participants or the place or the crowd that's listening is any different from what just happened before it. And on top of that, it begins with that telling phrase, truly, truly, I tell you. And in the book of John, that phrase only comes at the end of a section. It sums up a section rather than at the beginning of it. So, obviously, chapter 10 intends to continue what happened in chapter 9. What happened there? Well, it's a story of the blind man who Jesus healed on the Sabbath day. And the religious leaders got very upset that Jesus healed him on the Sabbath, because the Sabbath was a day of rest and you were not to do any works, even works of mercy like this, evidently. And so eventually, even the poor man who was blind was kicked out of the synagogue altogether. But then Jesus sought him out and revealed who he really was, and the blind man believed. But the religious leaders, the Pharisees, persisted in their spiritual blindness. And at the end of the chapter, chapter 9, or what's called chapter 9, Jesus says to them, if you were blind, you would not have sinned. But now that you say, we see, your sin remains. And it's from there that Jesus continues in the same place with the same listeners. Very truly, I tell you, anyone who does not enter by the sheepfold by the gate, but climbs in by another way, is a thief and a robber, a bandit. So, if you wonder who are the thieves and the bandits, all you need to do is to look back at those Pharisees who had just thrown the blind man out of the synagogue. They thought they owned the religious life of the Jewish people. To them, Jesus was an upstart. He was an interloper on their turf because he didn't follow their rules. So Jesus says that they are thieves and bandits, who vandalize the flock. It seems odd to us. It seems even cruel that the Pharisees could focus on the fact that Jesus had healed the blind man on the Sabbath day rather than that he had given this man the joy of liberating him from his lifelong blindness. How does that happen? John Ortberg suggests the answer involves what might be called boundary markers or identity markers. Every group tends to mark its boundaries in some way. They set up some visible, sometimes relatively superficial practices or things which are meant to distinguish the insiders from the outsiders. We can all recognize the certain boundary markers in our society, various groups that are around us. For example, there are particular markers if you're a Harley biker, or if you're a fashion-conscious professional. Skateboarders have their boundary markers. Sports fans. These boundary markers are meant to create a kind of group identity. For the religious leaders of Jesus' day, it was the fine points of the Mosaic law. That's what distinguished the insiders from the outsiders. Not even a miracle, not even setting a blind man free, could obscure or overcome that boundary marker. Now, that tendency to have religious boundary markers has not gone away. Where I grew up, one of the biggest boundary markers of all was that you didn't mow your lawn and wash your car and things like that on the Sabbath day because that was the day of rest. You didn't do anything that looked like work of any kind. And so we would drive to church looking sadly at our poor, lost neighbors who were mowing their lawn or washing their car because, you see, our witness to our neighbors was the fact that we maintained the boundaries of our group. If they wanted to be in our group, then they could use our boundary markers. Sometimes the boundary markers have to do with political or social beliefs that the church identifies as being crucial. In some churches, not only do you have to believe in Jesus, but you have to have the correct stand on, say, the inerrancy of the Bible or homosexuality, or marriage and divorce, or some other issue. Or you have to identify with a certain political agenda, whether it's left or whether it's right. Whether your religious background is liberal or conservative or Protestant or Catholic, you can probably come up with a set of boundary markers that were common within that particular group. The danger of these boundary markers, these identity badges, is that they will become the gate instead of Jesus. Dallas Willard once remarked about how many people are repelled from following the Good Shepherd by Christians who are unloving, who are judgmental, who are obsessive. It's like Mark Twain's characterization of an acquaintance of his as a good man in the worst sense of the word. If what we're hearing from religious leaders is a lot of boundary talk and not much about Jesus, if it's more about judging outsiders than inviting them in, then it may very well be a thief or a bandit who is fleecing the flock. I am the gate, says Jesus. Anyone who comes in by another way is a thief and a bandit. It's not your political beliefs. It's not your social beliefs. It's not your sexual orientation. It's not your marital status. It's not your allegiance to a denomination. It's your allegiance to Jesus that counts. Jesus is the gate, and he is the good shepherd, and he decides who's in and who's out. And then instead of setting boundaries, Jesus focuses on the center, on the heart of the spiritual life. He speaks to the deepest longings of the human heart, and he invites people into a full and flourishing life. I came, he says, that they may have life and have it abundantly. And that's really the point of the whole passage here. It's not so much about the dangers posed for the flock by the thieves and the bandits. It's about the intimate relationship between the shepherd and the sheep. The dangers posed by the sheep and the thieves and the bandits are real, but ultimately, they can't steal the sheep. Why? Because the good shepherd knows the sheep, and the sheep know him. And the sheep hear the voice of the shepherd, and they will not follow a stranger. It's that simple. In other words, as dangerous as the thieves and the bandits might be, Jesus emphasizes the assurance and confidence of belonging to the good shepherd. They know the shepherd's voice, and they respond when the shepherd calls their name, and they will not listen to a stranger, he says. Do you hear the voice of the shepherd? The same voice that spoke to Mary at the tomb. It's the voice of love and forgiveness in the midst of our messed up lives. It's the voice of calm and assurance in the midst of our anxiety. It's the voice of truth and justice that rings out over the lies of our culture. Somehow we know that voice. And listening to that voice changes everything. What does it mean to follow the good shepherd's voice? Notice what Jesus says about the shepherd and the sheep. I am the gate, he says. Whoever enters by me will be saved and will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief cometh only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. Jesus is the gate of our salvation who leads us to an abundant life. He laid down his life and purchased our freedom and restores us to our full and flourishing human life. And he's not just talking about some future heavenly existence, this abundant life. He's talking about life here and now. As a kid growing up, the picture that I sometimes had about being saved and about following Jesus did not always look like an abundant human life to me. It didn't seem to be about engagement with the world, but separation from the world. And I worried that following Jesus, I would end up with a life that was dried up and colorless and cramped. But I kept hearing the voice of the Good Shepherd. And I heard it especially in Christians who I knew and who I watched, who were following Jesus while they were fully engaged in the world and in the culture around them. People of deep faith, people of persistent prayer, people of loving servanthood. I heard the voice of the shepherd through a young Christian high school English teacher who passionately loved literature. Not hothouse Christian literature, but Steinbeck and Faulkner and Shakespeare, and she taught me how to read it and absorb it as a Christian. I heard the voice of the Good Shepherd one summer in college through a seminary student who invited me to join him in a ministry in the inner city in Grand Rapids, and it was not just to save the lost, but to work within that community to break down the barriers of prejudice and injustice, some of those barriers of which were in my own heart. I heard the shepherd's voice in my in-laws, who spent the better part of their lives as medical missionaries in India and Pakistan and Nigeria and Ethiopia. I heard the voice of the shepherd in the Christians that I began to read and admire. People who were out there on the front lines of human life and human culture. People like Dietrich Bonhoeffer and Martin Luther King. Writers like Flannery O'Connor and Walker Percy. William Stringfellow and Dorothy Day. And Max Dupree, the president of Herman Miller. And congressmen like Steve Munsma and Paul Henry. These were Christians of my day who followed Jesus into the world and were engaged in the biggest issues of our time, who gave their lives in love and service and following the shepherd. Through the testimony of their lives, I heard Jesus calling me out of a life defined by its boundaries to following him into a world as a citizen of the kingdom of God. Jesus says, I am the gate. Whoever enters by me will be saved and will come and go and find pasture. The good shepherd leads us in and leads us out. I think Jesus describes here what is a healthy rhythm of the Christian life. He leads us in and he leads us out. It's a wonderful picture of both security and freedom. The sheep are both secure within God's fold and free to go out. The shepherd brings us into the fold, the church. We need the rest of its loving fellowship. We need to be strengthened with its training and its discipline. We need to learn to pray. We need to ground our lives in the great story of God through the teaching and liturgy of the church. But Jesus doesn't lead us into the fold to become fat, docile sheep behind our high boundary walls. The Good Shepherd also leads us out into the world to be people of creativity and passion and love and hope and grace and truth in every human endeavor. From politics to the arts, from law to medicine, from the office to the factory, from the classroom to the boardroom. The picture that we saw in the book of Acts was a wonderful picture. That fellowship, that sharing of everything. Then at the very end it says, and the Lord added to their number every day. First, the Lord was doing it because people heard the voice of the shepherd through this community that was living in love. Jesus does not call us to somehow renounce our humanity or to turn away from the world and our fenced-off camps. Jesus calls us to be fully human as he was fully human. And it is not a cramped, squeezed, inhibited life, but a vibrant, full, engaged human life. Jesus says, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.